ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Hi, it's Sam Hawley from ABC News Daily, the podcast that brings you one big story affecting your world each weekday in just 15 minutes.
Lawmaking and regulating hate speech is difficult because you have to balance freedom of speech, but then you need to draw the line at genuinely harmful speech, which is something I've been arguing for decades.
Join me for ABC News Daily. Find it on the ABC Listen app.
This podcast was produced on the lands of the Awabakal and Gadigal people. G'day, Matt Bevan here. This is If You're Listening. So there's this interesting audio trick called a shepherd tone. It sounds like this. Now, to the listener's ear, it sounds like it's continuously ascending in pitch. But it's not actually getting any higher. There's no payoff, no crescendo, just rising tension. It's a pretty complicated audio illusion, which works by playing multiple sine waves simultaneously, with each wave separated by a full octave. As the pitch rises, the higher octaves gradually fade out, and the lower octaves gradually fade in, and that's what creates this whole illusion. Okay, turn it off now. According to John Lovett from Pod Save America, the long-running liberal political commentary podcast, this shepherd tone is what the US political climate has felt like for the last decade. It feels like it's getting faster and more intense, but we don't actually arrive at any climax. It just keeps rising and rising. I had a chat with John about the current landscape of the US and how foreign leaders should be responding to Donald Trump's negotiation tactics. John Lovett, thanks for speaking to us on If You're Listening.
Thanks for having me.
John, can you expand on this idea of the US political environment being like a shepherd tone?
Yeah, so there's this strange feeling, which is that we've been talking about our worst person, Donald Trump, for about a decade. And I have to say, that's a terrible use of time. We'd much rather be talking about other things. So a shepherd tone is an illusion in which it always sounds like the pitch is rising. It's going up and up and up and up. And that's what it's felt like. And yet the chaos of politics feels constant, right? And it's hard to measure what's getting worse. Where are they pulling back? There's always a new struggle. There's always a new fight. We're not talking about Greenland because we're talking about the chaos and violence that we're seeing in Minnesota in the Twin Cities. We're not talking about ICE right now because, oh, we're going to talk about the raid into Venezuela without congressional authorization. There's just the tensions are always rising, and yet we kind of also feel quite stuck.
Yeah, and it's interesting because all of those things are constantly overlapping as well. They're all happening at the same time. But this situation in Minneapolis where there has been weeks of protest, people have been killed, and now there seems to be a retreat from the Trump administration. Do you think this is a mini crescendo, a slight turning point where public pressure has seemingly caused a shift in Trump administration policy?
I think the short answer is yes. I think people are resistant, correctly, to let their guards down, to ever exhale, because A, you don't want to seem naive in hindsight, and B, you know, there's always a new crisis. There's always a new challenge, and you don't want to take anybody's word for it in this administration. But replacing, there was a guy named Greg Bovino. I don't know how closely you're following it, but this guy, Greg Bovino.
Here in Australia, we follow it much more closely than we should probably. Well, but no, we're across Greg Bovino. Yeah.
So we're replaced by this guy, Tom Homan. Bovino from the Border Patrol, Tom Homan, most recently in the news because he allegedly took a $50,000 cash bribe in a Kava bag. Kava's like a food chain over here.
Yep. We put our bribes in Aldi bags here in Australia.
Right. Yeah. And that's, and they actually go the other, your bribes go counterclockwise.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah. So obviously the bar here is low, but you know, I interviewed Governor Tim Walz, governor of Minnesota, and he told me that behind closed doors, Homan had told him that they hadn't been doing it the right way. Homan seemed to acknowledge that today. It sounds like they're going to reduce the number of federal officers in Minneapolis, that's another sign that things are not just, you know, on the surface changing, but actually changing. And I do think that tells you that the people of Minneapolis and St. Paul and Minnesota bravely stood up to Trump and won. It's not a permanent victory. It's not a total victory, but they won. They beat him. And they backed down because the images were so bad and because they underestimated the resolve and empathy of Americans. And that is their weakness. They do not appreciate that kindness doesn't make you weak. They assume it does. They assume that you can't be caring and strong, but that is just not the case. And nice people, push them hard enough, will show you how strong they are. And it is weak people who try to dominate and prove their toughness and wear masks and point their guns, right? I think that to me is the lesson there. Another lesson is I think it's worth putting these things together. We're a year into Trump. We have seen corporations capitulate. The Republicans have been capitulating. Universities have capitulated. Law firms, media companies, major institutions of public life. As the city of Minneapolis, as the people of Minnesota are showing that that courage can work, that resolve can win, all across America right now, there are empty theaters for the film Melania, which Amazon spent tens of millions of dollars on as a bribe, because they obviously know it is not worth that much and that nobody was going to see it. The theaters are all empty. Now, at least when Tom Homan, allegedly, I just were going based on public reports, allegedly took cash in a kava bag, he knew that it should be something not for the public consumption because it's a bribe. And so you got to do it quietly, put it in a bag, try to keep it secret. Amazon has put the bribe in every theater in the country. Every empty theater is evidence of their wrongdoing, and they're just rubbing it in our faces. And so it wasn't the corporations that held the line, certainly not the Republicans. I think a lot of Democrats have tried, but were not in power. It was ordinary people that stood up, and it will be ordinary people in our country that determine how far Trump can go. And also, by the way, that can represent to the rest of the world what America is supposed to stand for, because obviously it is bad for our country to have someone like Donald Trump representing us, because it undermines our interests, our values. It undermines one of our great strengths, which is the moral and ethical leadership we're meant to show. And I hope that people around the world can see that here in our country, in the United States, that the majority of Americans, whatever led Trump back into power, are turning against what's happening.
I'm going to ask you a question that may require you to engage in a little bit of light treason, but we've seen, you mentioned foreign leaders and you mentioned mm-hmm. the rest of the world. We've seen that public pressure works on Trump domestically after a while. The US president obviously has a lot of influence over the entire world, and the rest of the world kind of doesn't seem to know how to deal with that. You've got mm-hmm. some countries being quite solicitous towards Donald Trump. You've got Mark Carney in Canada being openly oppositional, whereas you've also got Australia's Anthony Albanese kind of trying to stand very still so the T-Rex can't see us.
Right.
What would you do if you were in the office of a foreign leader advising them on how to deal with this administration that is erratic and that kind of thing? This is where the light treason comes in.
So I just want to go on record just to say I don't believe any of this conversation comes anywhere close to the definition of treason. So
fair enough.
Look, I think we've seen a lot of different approaches. You know, there's a tension, right? Because there's an understanding that Trump isn't doing diplomacy, because diplomacy is about the interests of nations, and Trump doesn't really care that much about the interests of nations. He cares about his own ego and personal standing and press and interests. And so when leaders are dealing with Trump, they're not doing international relations. They're dating. That's flirting. They have to flirt. Yeah. There have been people that have tried different things. Ruta, the head of NATO, has tried to find ways to disagree amiably. Of course, that stops working when you're trying to defend NATO and one of its members is threatening another member. Hmm. And you're like, no, he's not.
He's just,
I don't think he is.
Daddy giving us, he keeps calling him daddy. That was the kind of the weird thing.
deeply uncomfortable. Yeah, deeply uncomfortable. And then you see his text there, because Trump posts the text and it's like, can't wait to see you. And like nobody in the history of society has ever been excited to see Donald Trump. That's just like not an emotion that's a human being is capable of, but he's trying to do this dance of assuaging Trump's ego. And then you have Mark Carney, I think, who gives a pretty defiant and important speech about the actual strategy required to deal with an America that is no longer acting like the leader of an international order, but as a great power that believes might makes right. And that obviously pissed Trump off. I don't know what the answer is, what the best approach is, but I would say what we have learned is Trump will push exactly as far as he can get away with. And if you let him push you, he'll keep going and going and going. And it may be uncomfortable and it may be ugly at times, but you have to push back. We're not getting out of this without a lot of chaos and damage. You have to get, there's no way to smooth talk your way around the harm that Trump is going to do. You have to mitigate harm and you have to mitigate risk. And that's going to require drawing lines in the sand and having really bad confrontations with him at times. That's true domestically. That's true internationally. That's the nature of this. I will say I talked to a friend of mine who had played Donald Trump in both the debate prep with Hillary Clinton and later with the debate prep with Kamala Harris. And he's been called upon by various leaders for advice on how to deal with Trump in one-on-one meetings, like prominent people that have had to meet with Donald Trump.
Right.
Because he knows the ins and outs. And he had this funny piece of advice, which is if things ever get hairy, if the meeting gets tense, ask to see the new patio. And that works. Apparently someone tried and it works. You just say, God, I heard you've done a great thing with the Rose Garden. The real estate guy pops up, wants to give you a tour.
How's that ballroom going? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. He wants to talk countertops. So that's all I got. Hold the line. I think probably the truth is holding the line on the substance and avoiding making it personal without giving an inch on what matters and probably truthfully doing the kind of assuaging that the Macrons have done and the Rutas have done, because that has an impact, right? Even Mamdani was able to do that.
Yes. Mamdani, yeah, an odd relationship seemingly forming between Trump and Mamdani. Here in Australia, we've got a shadow cabinet. We've got an official opposition leader, and each minister with a portfolio has a shadow minister whose job it is to keep that person in check. On that portfolio, they stay on message.
Mm-hmm.
When we get to an election, it kind of feels like we've got an established alternative government and the public knows the leader and the cabinet and policies of the opposition. Trump kind of seemed to fill this role during the Biden administration. He was kind of sitting there as an opposition leader, claiming what he would do if he was the president. The Democrats, though, seem to be kind of in chaos and fighting with each other until the last possible second.
Sure.
Is there some way that they can prepare themselves earlier, sort of get their ducks in a row before taking on Donald Trump in 2024? And will the, if they win the House, would that help or hinder that?
What a sweet idea. No. Can Democrats do that? No. So, listen. The parliamentary style has a lot going for it. That's not how we operate over here. We're in a presidential system. There are many people who have said that that was a mistake. But you know what? They're Monday morning quarterbacks. We ended the age of kings. We launched the rise of global democracy. We've gotten out some of the kinks in the years since, but we're still doing it. Democracy classic. That's what the Constitution is. It's got a lot of mistakes in it. The pardon power, that was a miss. Obviously, the fact that our legitimacy is spread between a Congress elected every 2 and 6 years and a presidency elected every 4 years has created a lot of tension and a lot of problems. That's the system. The answer to me is we have an election 1 year from now, the midterms. That is a referendum on Trump and his leadership. And that is what is going to play out. Now, separate from that, even if the country is fed up with Donald Trump, which it seems to be, even if they want to give Democrats a chance, Democrats' approval rating is in the absolute toilet. Nobody knows what the Democrats stand for. People don't like the Democratic Party. There is a massive, massive brand problem. Now, you can overcome that in a midterm, but then the presidential will come. The reality is that brand problem is, yes, it is a consequence of Democrats as they are right now and the things they say and don't say and the ways in which they act and talk. But it is also because we didn't have a primary in 2024, and the primary we had in 2020 was very important, but ultimately was a primary that chose Joe Biden, I think with good justification, that he was the right person to bring about a restoration of calm to end the Trump era. But that was the mission. It was about removing Trump and getting back to some kind of normalcy. That isn't as much a vision for the future.
They also picked Biden because everybody knew him.
Yes.
He was well known and people kind of knew what kind of president he would be. Is the primary too late? Is there some way of doing it earlier?
No. The brand problem is not going to be resolved by a primary. It's obviously bigger than that. But what does the Democratic Party stand for? Well, when you have a presidential primary and a leader emerges and that person wins, that person sets the direction of the party and what the public imagines Democrats stand for. We need to have that fight. And by the way, we have to have that fight in a way that lands on a vision for the future that is politically the right message, but also one that genuinely tackles the grand challenges of the age, which we just do not have. In a lot of ways, we are at the end of a very long era of Democratic politics and policymaking. You could argue that it begins with Clinton, continues basically through Obama and Biden. We have a whole host of new challenges. Obviously, the emergence of a radicalized Republican Party speaks to a deeper problem and set of problems in our economy, in our politics, in our society, in our values as people. But I think that also leads you to ask certain questions about, like, there's a crisis in our country around, yes, like economics, but also meaning and purpose when we are like feel a little bit at war with each other, when we feel violated by big tech companies and their interference in our privacy and the way social media warps our perspective on community and on each other. There's just the ways in which our economy has been transformed into one that is controlled to a much larger degree than in the past by big companies, not just in terms of the stock market, but in terms of the restaurants people go to and their experience of everyday life. Like, there have been a lot of changes that are very frustrating to people that we need to put language to and answers to. Because if we don't try to answer those questions, Donald Trump and those who follow Donald Trump will answer those questions for us.
Just finally, your tour is called the Hopefully Just Visiting Tour, which mm-hmm. I think is very funny. I realize it's a joke, but how safe do you feel while doing your job in America these days? You guys are out there in the world. You know, you were there in Minneapolis. You go and you speak to people. Is it scary at all being out and about in 2026, an era after the shooting of Charlie Kirk?
The ways in which politics has become more radical in America, the ways in which violence feels closer than before. To be honest, I try not to think about how it has anything to do with our day-to-day job here. And also, we're podcast hosts on the list of right-wing enemies. You got to go pretty far down before you get to us. But Trump and what Trump represents, part of it is a kind of decadence. And that, like, I mean that word specifically. And what I mean is you take for granted all the hard work that allowed you to live in a country that was peaceful and democratic, prosperous, in a mostly safe world. You take those things for granted and so you strike at their foundations. That's going after global aid. That's attacking the independence of the judiciary. That's politicizing the Justice Department. It's also being glib about political violence because you can't remember or imagine how bad it could get. Mm. Same thing going after vaccines. And that hardening and coarsening is really, really dangerous, not for us or anyone specifically, but for all of us. And by the way, when you see that, and look, there's a big difference between having leaders in the Republican Party and having a president who pardons January 6 rioters and violent people and random people on the internet who celebrate the murder of Charlie Kirk or who celebrate Luigi Mangione for killing the CEO of United. There's a difference between people in power and random people on the internet, and that's an important distinction. Mm-hmm. However, to me, it is all of a piece, which is all political violence is dangerous and it is dangerous to everybody. And so collectively, we need to denounce it. And honestly, that makes politics cleaner and simpler because I denounce all forms of it. We denounce all forms of political violence. I don't have to care what somebody stands for to believe that any ways in which that is inhibited by threats, intimidation, violence, it doesn't matter. It's wrong. It's wrong when protesters are attacked by government officials. It's wrong in any form. And we have to collectively get back to that. And how we do that, part of it is you have to make clear that the kind of politics Donald Trump practices, first and foremost, is not just wrong, but ultimately will fail.
John, you've been following American politics every single day for so long. I hope your trip to Australia and New Zealand is a bit of a break.
I'm excited. We're going to Sydney. We're going to Brisbane. We're going to Melbourne. We're going to go to Auckland.
A bit more relaxing down here.
I'm so excited. I've never been there.
Oh, wow.
Never been. Excited to see all the friends of the pod. We're going to be doing all these shows, but I want to try to make it a trip where we get to explore and see the country and meet people. So I'm pumped, and everybody should come to the shows. There are not that many tickets left for the Australia shows. They're selling. So you got to go. This is not Melania. All right. These are real shows that are going to potentially sell out. However, I got to tell you something funny about the Auckland show.
Yeah.
We didn't know we booked it on the same night as Lorde.
Oh, wow.
So we're competing against fucking Lorde.
But look, Lorde is a New Zealander. Surely they've all seen her just down at the pub, you know.
For sure.
It's fun.
And besides, any songs Lorde's going to play are on Spotify. We're going to do new shit.
Oh, wow. Okay, yes.
It's going to be all new content at the Auckland.
Take on Lorde. Fantastic. Oh, I mean, perhaps you could do sort of a Barbenheimer thing.
Uh-huh.
Either with Lorde or with Melania, you know. You could do
for
that
sure.
as well, you know.
Great idea. Thank you. No bad ideas in a brainstorm.
John, thank you so much for speaking to us.
Thanks for having me. Good to talk to you.
This Thursday, we're taking a close look at Stephen Miller. On paper, he's Trump's deputy chief of staff, but his agenda is informing almost everything the administration does, from ICE raids to threatening to invade Greenland to bombing boats off the coast of Venezuela. So what's this guy's deal, and how did he get so powerful? That's coming up on Thursday on If You're Listening.